Well, as that unmistakable music indicates, we're doing things a little bit different. We're going to start off with a big-name guest here today on Tri-City Sports Now. I'm Marky Bilson, your voice of choice for a new generation of Tri-City sports fans here, where we own the Tri-Cities on 1420 NBC Sports Radio Tri-Cities. One guy who owns a national championship and the title of the greatest living Tennessee Volunteer, because not only did he lead the Vols as a halfback from 4-6 as a sophomore to an undefeated regular season, but also three SEC titles, is John Majors, who joins us today. And the reason I'm having him on is obviously Tennessee has a stern test against the Alabama Crimson Tide tomorrow in Tuscaloosa. But if you look back in history, way back in 1982, John Majors was the coach of Tennessee when, just like today, the Vols were 500, and they beat number 2 Alabama, who had just come off a 3-touchdown victory against Penn State, who was the eventual national champion, and led the Vols to a victory against Alabama, ending an 11-game losing streak to the Crimson Tide. It's great to have you on here, and I know we were talking a little bit yesterday about the game and all this, and the one thing that you did there was change the formation, I think. You told me that in the previous game against LSU, Tennessee went to a 3-wide receiver set, and it forged a tie against a good LSU team and then put up 35 points against Alabama. I wanted to ask you here, what was the motivation to change this modern formation with 3 wide receivers back then?
Well, I tell you what, pretty simple. We had 3 world-class sprinters. We had Tennessee's, University of Tennessee, at the time I was here, Stan Huntsman, the great track coach who won 1 or 2 national championships. We had the best football track combination program in the nation. And we recruited speed. We had 3 world-class sprinters that ran the fastest. They ran 4.240s. The fastest person I'd ever coached was Tony Dorsett at Pittsburgh. He ran a 4.3 that we timed him at, and also the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys, where he played pro ball, they timed him as 4.3 also. But Willie Gault, who was qualified for the Olympics in 82, when President Carter didn't let the team go because Russia had, it was going to be in Moscow, and Russia had attacked Afghanistan, and Carter, and I don't disagree with him, but that's long time ago. Willie Gault, one of our wide receivers who made All-American, and he's in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, ran a 4.240, and he qualified for the hurdles in the Olympics, but he didn't get to go. And we had 2 other sprinters that ran 4.240s, Wilson from up at Bristol, Tennessee, Darrell Wilson, and Mike Miller from Michigan. So we recruited nationwide, particularly east of the Mississippi River, and even a little bit in California, but a lot in Florida and Georgia. So anyway, I had an agreement that a lot of the coaches wouldn't excuse their track players for spring practice in football, and I had an agreement with the players when I recruited them. You have to come out for spring practice in football your freshman year. But if you qualify for the Penn Relays, which are famous, I guess, as far, and the Great Relays, which was in Des Moines, Iowa, those were the 2 greatest relays in the country for amateurs. I said, if you qualify for those in spring practice, I would excuse you for those events, but you'll be out for practice. But after your freshman year, you won't have to practice in spring practice. So we recruited people, Coach Barry Bryant and Joe Paterno and Bo Schembechler from Michigan. They were not doing that. So we got a real fuss. I'd rather a player not be in spring practice because you got a chance to get hurt more. If he's a great athlete, I'd rather have him on my campus than him going to Alabama or Auburn or somewhere that wasn't doing that. But we were here. We won national championships in track, and we were developing an outstanding football program. So we had three 4.240 people. One of them, Willie Gault, the Olympic sprinter, hurdler. They were a great sprinter. We had 3 of them. So Al Saunders was my outstanding offensive coordinator. He ended up being the head coach of the San Diego Chargers. and he's still coaching in pro football, which he's been in for 25 years. So he was a real good pass master, I should say. You know about the forward pass, and we were expanding already with the passing game to make a balanced offense, and we put the three rods in the week before we played LSU down in Baton Rouge, and they had a very good team, and we tied them. We tied them 17-17, I believe, and Carl Pickens, another great athlete, was a high jumper and a long jumper, ran a touchdown back for her on a kickoff. So that worked out well for us, the track folks. That's the reason we went to three wide, because we had such great talent and great speed. I wanted to put them all in the game at one time, just rather than have one of them as a split end and the other as a flanker. We had three wides.
Boy, John Majors, I tell you, the names that you've just mentioned there are nothing short of legends, and I don't know where to begin. Even someone like Al Saunders, who, like you said, was just such a great defensive coach. I do remember him with the Chargers, as you mentioned. As I look to this year, though, I know that at that time, you know, I talked to you yesterday, the similarities, Tennessee 500 then, Tennessee 500 now, playing a strong Alabama team. It was your sixth year, and you hadn't yet taken the Vols to the Sugar Bowl. Let me ask you, did you feel any heat? Were there? Did you feel any long knives out for you then in 82? Just like there are, quite frankly, long knives out for Butch Jones right now. What did that victory mean for your coaching career going forward at Tennessee?
Main thing, it meant a tremendous amount to the University of Tennessee football program, and the fans, the people that supported University of Tennessee, because we broke an 11-game winning streak that Alabama had against Tennessee. I'm pretty sure it was six victories the last 6 years of Bill Battle, who I succeeded, and then we had five straight losses to Alabama, so it was 11 straight. So we broke the siege, or we broke the terrible record. And interestingly, that was the year that we had the World's Fair here in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. And when we won Thursday night before we won the game, I had friends from Pittsburgh in, and my wife Mary Lynn and I took them down to the Foundry Club down in the World's Fair set up, and it was packed. A lot of fans already in town, students and fans, and packed. And when I came in, they started yelling, "Beat Bama, beat Bama, beat Bama." And my friend said, "Oh, man, I believe they want you to beat Alabama." So there were a lot of them on the tables up there, because you beat Bama, beat Bama, when I came in. So I jumped up on the table with them, and we said, "Oh, yeah, beat Bama." And we beat them 35-28. It was a very exciting, fabulous ball game. The students tore down the goalposts and carried them down right down to Cumberland Avenue, which is the main street of campus, and ended up sawing them into pieces and selling them. So a lot of people still have those on their mantle or in their gallery or whatever, in their homes or in the lounge area. So that was very popular. They sawed it up with some kind of steel saws, and it was a great, exciting time. And we had a better team in 83. So that was helpful to us to keep building. Sometimes like Bush Jones got a tough job and rebuilding. When the program's down, it takes some time to rebuild. You've got some ups and downs. And he's chasing we've got a real tough challenge ahead of him. And that's the way it is in building a program. But he's a very diligent, dedicated worker. He really is a real hard worker, a very conscientious, aggressive person. And he's a good man, and he's had some good success before with the coach. And I know he'll have the team as ready as they can be, but it's going to be a very, very huge, huge challenge. And I bet that we were 14-point underdogs the year we beat Alabama, upset 82. I believe Tennessee's about a 34-point underdog. But my former team had two former teams, Pittsburgh, and before that, Iowa State as head coach. And our team, Iowa State, upset Oklahoma, who I believe was second or third in the country about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, a lot of things can happen. You get a quick break. I think Iowa State was behind, I believe, 3 touchdowns and came back. And I think scored 3 or 4 touchdowns in a row and beat them in the last minute or two of play on a great drive upfield or downfield, whatever what it takes to cross a goal line. And so I don't say anything's possible. I don't know if that's correct, but there are a lot of things that have happened that are surprising. Well, heck, Washington University was 3rd or 4th or 5th and got beaten by somebody last. Oh, but got beat by Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. There's a big upset or two happening every week now. I think it's because there's a lot of talent out there. There've always been upsets, but I think I don't know when I see any more major upsets like Clemson getting beaten up at Syracuse. But Syracuse is better. They've got a good coach there. It looks like Iowa State is better. They're now 4-2, but they were 3-2 or 2-2 when they beat upset Oklahoma. So a lot of times anything can happen. You get a couple of early breaks, an interception, a fumble recovery, you score early, and you get a lot more confidence. Now, Alabama doesn't turn the ball over much, so that's going to be a challenge. But they had a contest against Texas A&M, so who knows? Maybe this will be our day and Butch Jones' day.
Well, one thing that I mentioned, the change that you made against LSU to go to the more modern receiver set, which now everybody does, the 3 wide receivers, and that had to help you beat Alabama because you put 5 touchdowns on the board. I've wondered, I mean, Jared Guarantano, that's the change the game before this year's Alabama team, and I'm going to be talking to it a little bit in my monologue after I talk with you, Coach Majors, but I thought maybe that there are certain similarities. That's another similarity to then and now. But I did want to ask you, I know that you have a relationship with Butch Jones, that you usually talk to him before the game or send him a positive message, a message of encouragement, that sort of thing. What are you going to tell Butch Jones, before this game against Alabama?
Well, I can't say that I talk to Butch Jones every week because I don't. But I do want to see him win and be successful. And I'm very certain that we have a good relationship. And he's been very, very kind to me, and I'm supportive of him, of course, because he's a very fine man. He works diligently. I mentioned that. But, I was just writing my note, and I said, when we were down and we were struggling, when I was at Iowa State, where we had to go from bottom to being competitive to the first 2 bowl games in the school history in my 4th and 5th years, We had an uphill fight, and it was tough. They called it a coach's graveyard, but I survived. And Pittsburgh was on the very bottom. And we went to a bowl game the first year. We recruited very well. But the point is, I said to Coach Jones, a little note, I said, when things weren't going well and things were tough, I get the questions answered by the media. I didn't try to answer every fan because it was impossible, and it'd waste your time. But when I talk to the public from the media or talk to the quarterback club, say on a Monday, I said, what are you going to do now, Coach? You're struggling. I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. Right today, I don't have the exact answer, the solution. But I'm going to tell you one thing. We're going to work to get a better solution. And I'll tell you one thing for sure. We're going to keep on keeping on. And we're going to try to keep learning to slobber knock them. And keep getting better. And my motto throughout my whole career, 29 years as a head coach, and I'm actually 12th of all time for coaching most games in the history of college football.
Mm.
I've had some experience, and it hasn't all been easy. But I said, I took the job at Iowa State, which they call a coach's graveyard. They'd never been to a bowl game. And I said, here's what our goal is going to be. We're going to play with pride and enthusiasm. We're going to be enthusiastic. We're going to practice enthusiastically. We're going to practice with pride and tradition. We're going to play with pride and enthusiasm, And we will never learn to lose. If you never learn to lose and take losing as a way of life, you will eventually learn to win. And we always wanted all three jobs that I had. Not every game, don't get me wrong, or every season. But we always built a winning program, and I always left the program better than what it was when I took it. Tremendously better. So the players responded. I hired good people. And you keep on keeping on. You keep fighting your guts out to keep those players confident as much as they can. Because right now, I'm sure their confidence is hurting to a large degree. Because if they haven't been able to score recently in the last 2.5 games and touchdowns. So you got to keep on keeping on. That's the best advice I could get in. And I don't think the Bush Jones has to be told that.
Possibly not.
The police. He's been through tough times before.
Well, let me ask one final question here to you. I know your first recruiting class at Tennessee, you brought in a player from Unicoi County named Clark Duncan. And I want to ask you this because I happen to be now the play-by-play announcer for Unicoi County football. But I wanted to ask what it was about Clark Duncan in your first recruiting class at Tennessee that you liked. I know he became a starting defensive back for you at Tennessee and later a high school football coach in the Knoxville area. But what was it about Clark Duncan? What are some of your memories of Clark Duncan?
Now, what high school did Clark, I know Clark Duncan, but I thought he, where'd you say?
Unicoi. Unicoi, Irwin, Tennessee, Unicoi County.
Clark Duncan. But Clark Duncan was at a, well, it's because he was competitive and he's a good athlete and he's competitive and you didn't have to get on Clark Duncan very much to, I don't remember at all having to get on him very seriously about hustling at all because he hustled. He had a great attitude, and he's a good athlete, and he had a great desire to be the best he could be. That's all we can be, is be the best we could be. We can't all be great. We can't all be bad. Some people are not good enough to play here because they're not athletic, but they bust their gut, and they help your practices get better because they're hustling. But Clark Duncan had it all. He had hustle. He had desire. He had intelligence, and he had athletic ability. So that's pretty good. A combination there, be successful. I mean, he was a pleasure to coach.
Well, we had to ask that because of the station. I know that Unicoi County is off this week, but we certainly do broadcast the games, and we'll be broadcasting the one next week when the Blue Devils play Johnson County for potentially a region championship. Anyway, John Majors, it is always a pleasure to speak with you, whether I'm talking to you about the Tennessee Volunteers or in the historically when I've covered the Pitt Panthers. So it's a great pleasure to always to talk to you here, and I look forward to doing it again. We're going to go out with the William Tell Overture, which was the theme that Myron Cope used to have when you were building the program at the University of Pittsburgh that he would play on, and you were discussing that right now. So we'll close out just like we began with that. In many ways, he is the Lone Ranger.
Myron Cope would lead off his program. That's my first year in Pittsburgh. I had a few Southern coaches with me, Jackie Sherrill among a few others. And he started out and said, now, we were traveling all over the country, recruiting everywhere. We got a bunch of players that year that built or started our program on a foundation. He started to start the program off. Before he played the overture, he said, and now we're following Major Majors and his Confederate Raiders. And he says, William Tell Overture. He played that for several weeks, man. It really caught on in Pittsburgh. And we did some recruiting, I'll tell you that. We got some good players.
73 scholarships the first year, including Tony Dorsett, isn't bad. And then again, getting Clark Duncan in your first class in Tennessee isn't too bad either. John Majors, it is always a pleasure.